Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fuck Knicks, what the fucking Eastas, what the fuckerecans, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my show, WTF. It's a podcast. I guess you know that if you're listening to it. How's everybody doing? Are you okay? Y'all right? Y'all good where you are? You running, you sweating, you sitting, you driving, you flying, you on a train? You digging holes out in the desert looking for treasure. All of you, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming. Today on the show, good show. Adam Devine, I'm going to talk to in a few minutes about a movie that we both are in. Can I say we're both in this film? He's got a slightly bigger part than me. And then veteran comic John Caponera, who I used to watch when I was a doorman at the Comedy Store. Impressive stylist, real deal comic. Just catching up with him. He's got a self-published book he'd like you to check out, if you would. It's called The Life in Comedy. You can get it on Amazon. What else do I need to plug? Look, Spokane, I'll be there tonight. Apparently, there's still some tickets for tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at the Spokane Comedy Club. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour to link up to that. I got Wise Guys coming up in Salt Lake City. July 14, 15, and 16. And I've got the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, July 28th, 29th, and 30th. And I'll be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix. Look, that's a big room. And if you guys don't start buying tickets, who knows what will happen? You understand? September 3rd at the Albuquerque Journal Theater. And I'll be in September, I'll be at the Rochester, at the Comedy Club in Rochester, New York, the 9th. And the 10th. And that's about all for now. Those things are happening. I'll be with Dean Del Rey here in L.A. at the El Rey Theater on July 19th. Me and Anthony Jeselnik and Joey Diaz. Dean Del Rey and friends at the El Rey Theater. Go do that if you want. Also, I'd like to give a little love to my friend, to my dear friend, Dom Irrera, who is going to be playing at the Denver Comedy Works, one of the best rooms in the world, September 7th, 8th, and 9th. Give a little love to the great Buddhas of the stand-up profession. What's happening? How are we doing? Everything all right? Did I mention everything? Hey, so you want to know what's going on with Buster Keaton? Buster Keaton, the amazing slapstick cat. Buster Keaton is now in the second bedroom, comfortably isolated, but not quarantined. I just got to get him acclimated. I got to introduce him to the other cats, but he's coming into his own. He seems to be sleeping on a pillow tucked in the bottom cubicle of a Kallax IKEA record shelf. Is that what it is? Are those the ones? Kallax shelving unit. If you don't know, that is truly the best shelving unit for records. But I got a little double Kallax, and the records are on top and underneath. I left open, and I stuck a pillow into one of the cubicle holes, and Buster Keaton is sleeping in there. I'm getting him the top-notch food. I'll go sit in there. He's purring. He's meowing. He's playing with a couple of mice. He's shitting in a box. He's doing all the things kittens do, and he will jump on my lap. That's the only trick that I know is happening right now, is he jumping on the lap. Adam Devine stopped by, and you know, sometimes I do these short interviews, and he came by to promote the movie he's in. So Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. I am in that movie. I'm in it. They remember, those of you who are around, they flew me to Hawaii for a day. I spent a day in Honolulu. They flew me down there. I got there, got some rest, got up. Was taken to set. The hotel was pretty interesting. There were dolphins at the hotel. There were like pools, tidal pools in back of the hotel, and there were dolphins in it. And I, if I'm not mistaken, turtles, maybe a turtle, a big turtle, dolphins at the hotel. That's fancy. And I did a scene. I played a bartender who was trying to stay sober. Now, I don't know. It was a very fun time. It was a fun day. I'm glad I did it. Have no idea what they used. Don't know how I did. Let's just do it. Let's just talk now to Adam Devine about that movie and about himself.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowerte-Dienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowerte-Dienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Little bit. You read all these books? I read some of these books.
Yeah.
But a lot of them I've had for many years.
And you've never read.
Right.
I'm thinking about buying more books, and I don't want to read all the books, you know?
Yeah, just use them for decor.
I want people to come in and be like, Jesus Christ, this guy reads.
Well, I mean, I've read, there are books on here that I've taken a look at. Then there are books that, you know, I was sent for free. Like, there's a lot of graphic novels that I've read, but there's some I haven't, but I don't want to get rid of them because I might look at them.
And I'll peruse all of them.
Sure.
I'm not going to read all of them.
Sure. And like some of the bios, some of these are good reference books. Some of these books I've been trying to read since I was in college and I don't understand them.
Some of them you want to just have so you know that it's a book.
Right.
You know, when people are like, that book, and you're like, yeah, I have that book.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I'm going to get to it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's on that list. One about the thing. Yeah, I got that.
I read the back of the book so I know it's the thing.
Or how about this one? I started that book. You know, I kind of got it. I get it.
Then I got busy and moved on to a bigger, thicker book.
Yeah, which I also started. So they're both by my bed.
Yeah. They're both in my garage.
Yeah, they're there. I got them. I got all the books. Adam Devine. Is that Mark how you say Marin. It? Is that your real name?
That's real. Yeah.
What? How does that happen?
I don't know. Penny and Dennis Devine also have it. My grandparents have it.
The Devines.
I don't know where it came from.
You don't know where it came from.
I know it's Irish. Everyone thinks I'm Jewish, but...
No, I thought it was Irish.
It's straight Irish. You thought it was Irish?
Yeah, I do. I did think it was Irish.
You have a book of Irish names?
Yeah, I looked it up before you got here.
Okay.
The book of Irish names.
What is his lineage?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It is Irish, probably. It definitely is.
Yeah, that's what they say. I don't know.
I think there's another actor. Maybe I saw a character in a movie about Ireland that's name was Devine.
That might be Ned Devine.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So we got to the bottom of
it. You're sourced.
Yeah. I want to do one of those, like, you see the commercials where they take, like, a prick of your blood, and then they figure you can be like, you are 65% Native American or whatever.
I just did that.
Did you?
You don't even need blood. You need spit.
No shit.
Yeah. I'm doing some TV show where they do that. It's sort of, this is your life genetic testing.
Oh, cool.
So I had to do two separate labs. So I just sent the other one. I sent two.
So you don't know what you are yet.
No, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Russian, Polish, German, Jewish mutt.
Cool.
Of some kind. That's the region.
Yeah.
Eastern European Jew area.
Yeah.
But you probably go right all the way back to Ireland. Do you ever go to Ireland?
I've never been. I've never even been overseas.
What?
To promote the movie, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. I was supposed to go to Berlin and London, I think.
Yeah.
But then I'm doing something. I'm shooting something else.
Never been out of the country. You're one of those you seem like kind of an American guy.
I'm super domestic. I'm a Bud Light of a human.
Domestic. Yeah. Where did you grew up? Where?
Iowa. Iowa and Nebraska.
Oh, my God.
Iowa till I was 10, and then moved to Omaha, Nebraska, and then lived there till I was 18.
Were your parents in farming?
Moved out here. No.
Really?
No.
My
dad works for the railroad.
So okay.
That's a very Midwestern thing.
Does he a switcher or a conductor?
He was
or
a conductor.
He was?
I think he did everything, but he's been a conductor for as far as I know. For as long as I know.
So he's on the train.
I remember, like, this is the most Americana shit that anyone can have.
Yeah.
I like, come at me with something more Americana.
Yeah.
Mark Maron listeners.
Yeah.
I remember being at a railroad crossing and seeing my dad hang out of the train and wave to us, like me and my mom.
There's dad.
Yeah, there he is. And he's like honking the horn and waving at me and stuff.
As the train goes by?
Yeah,
it was. But cool. He never took you in the engine?
He did. It was like wildly like illegal to take kids in there. Well, like train, I don't think like the Federales are going to, you know.
No,
but train law.
Right.
And, but I think he snuck me on for like my fourth birthday. I have like little kid photos. I don't really remember it, but.
It's okay to bring you on if it's not moving, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think
maybe
like,
just
it's like,
they want you around.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. That's where he keeps all the hookers and blow. Are
in
on
the engine.
Yeah.
In that front compartment.
Yeah.
So walk me through the what made you funny. Like what happened in childhood in terms of like, I did some reading. It sounds like you had some trouble.
Meth.
No.
No, I'm kidding. All these teeth are fake, Mark.
I believe that.
Yeah. They're too straight.
You don't strike me as a meth guy.
No, too chubby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't have that meth weight.
Were you a sports guy though?
No, I like wanted to be a professional baseball player when I was like really,
yeah,
really
course.
Young.
Yeah.
You know, everybody kind of did. But I was hit by a cement truck when I was 11, 10.
You were really hit by 11, a cement truck.
Yeah.
Like level.
For real.
Hit
crushed.
By a truck.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Took me under the first, like, I think like two wheels and
really?
Spit me out.
No.
And yeah, I broke every bone in my legs.
Oh, my God. That's just fucking awful.
Yeah.
That moment where something goes kakunka.
I'm glad I don't remember. Like, you know, obviously I don't remember. I like went into shock right away. But like that poor guy that was driving, he was like as old as I am now.
Right. Driving a truck.
Just driving a truck. And then he just crushes a little boy. Like that would be the
Whose
worst.
Fault was it? Did you run after a ball or something?
Yes, like he was drunk.
He was?
No, I wish I would like own the company. No, I'd be Mr. Cement Mix.
Yeah, Divine Cement.
Yeah, that's what it would be. Yeah. What a great alternate life that would have been.
I don't know. Would it have been?
Oh, fuck.
You're about to be a movie star.
Man.
But I could have a fleet of
cement trucks. No, it was like my one buddy was across the street. And I was on the other side, and it was we were in the suburbs, so like new houses were being built every day. And we were going to like the local convenience store to like, we would like rip pages out of Playboys and penthouses and stuff.
Steal gum.
See, this was pre internet.
Sure, of course.
Like, I'm on that cusp of like, I was like the last generation to like have to have nudie magazines.
Right, yeah.
So we were like trying to do that, and like our other friend would like trick. Well, not trick. We were like, probably
distract.
Bad at it. Distract. It would be like, hey, where's the razzmatazz suckers or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we would do that. But we were on our way to do that.
Did you cough? Like,
I don't know why we just didn't take
the whole magazine.
That's how dumb we were.
You thought that would be real stealing.
Yeah, that's real. We're
you
just weren't. Taking a page or
yeah,
two.
It's not
we
really
want to
stealing.
See an areola.
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah.
And so we were on our way to do that, and he yells, come on, as in, like, I'm excited to go do this. And I took it as in, come on, the coast is clear. And three cement trucks were going up the hill, and two were coming down. And so after the third one passed me going up the hill, he yells, come on. I'm like, okay. And I walked behind, and I couldn't see the other side of the street.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah, it was gnarly. I couldn't walk for 2 years.
See what happens when you rip off titties? When you rip off titty pages?
Yeah.
This is karmic return. God.
Literally rip off titties. I bet that would be worse.
Yeah, much
a lightning
worse.
Bolt would have
you
just...
No, yeah. you would have been died. You died in that truck.
Yeah, I would
by that truck. So that was... So for 3 years, recovery?
Two. It was a solid two before I could like really get up and walk.
That's a big shot to the childhood.
Yeah, middle school was a weird time.
Because they were wheeling you around?
Yeah.
You were in traction for a while?
I was in traction for a couple months.
Good orthopedic, then, I guess, put you together.
Yeah, they did a great job at the University of Nebraska Medical Center.
That's what my dad did. He was in that business. He was in the bone mending business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pins, things,
oh,
traction.
That's awesome.
Putting hips, legs, knees together.
It's cool that there's so much money in that because athletes need to get healthy.
Sure.
And so now, like, you want a fake knee? Easy. Yeah. Got you. Yeah, but
hip,
like,
no problem.
Lymphoma, cancer. So, like, we have no idea what's happening.
But we can replace every joint in the body if you need to throw a ball or catch one or run.
Yeah, if you're athletic or rich, we got you.
When did you start doing comedy stuff?
I I started like pretty young. I was like 13, and I would
freshly recovered.
Yeah,
learning to walk again.
Just learning to walk again. Yeah. And I couldn't. I like couldn't play sports. So when all my friends were playing sports and that kind
of. Was that heartbreaking though? Seriously?
Yeah, it was. You know, yeah. I really like liked playing sports.
You seem like a sports guy.
Yeah. So I couldn't do that anymore, but I liked making people laugh.
Yeah.
So I would call into the like local radio station, the local rock radio station, and would do different characters and voices, and I would write down sketches and
Did they hire you, or were you just doing it on your own?
Well, I did it on my own for a few months, and then it kind of became like a successful bit that they were doing. You know, in my mind, it probably was like 8 people listen, but I'm like, I heard like 2 people talk about me one time, and they like Kmart, and I'm like, I'm famous as fuck.
Yeah. They knew you though at the station. They're like, this is that kid.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know as a kid. They were like, hey, come in. We want to get you. We want to put you on staff and have you be like a recurring, like you do this every day.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, great. And I show up with my mom because I'm 13 years old. And they were like, holy shit. We had no idea you were a child, because I would never talk to them in my like little boy voice. I would always talk to them in character.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid they would find out I'm a little boy and be like, get out, you know, get out of here, you child.
Yeah. Did they give you the gig?
They couldn't pay me because I was, because it's illegal to work that young. But they were like, we'll give you all the free, like, we'll give you free CDs and all the free concert tickets you want, which is like better than money when you're 13 years old.
Yeah,
it was
like
any concert that I was. So, like, I saw Foo Fighters a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, that was the band that was like peaking when I was at that age. So,
yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So you went into the studio and did it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
How long did that last?
It lasted a little over a year, and then I went to Disney World with my family, like on a family vacation. Yeah. By that time, I was like 14 and like peak of like horny, pervy 14-year-old boy, like hard dick everywhere I go. Yeah. It was the worst vacation I've ever had.
Right.
Because it's just like, I don't want to ride rides. I want to try to talk to girls, but my parents are with me. And also, I'm bad at talking to girls. And there's all these hot girls walking around with their family.
Right,
it was a
right.
nightmare for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I come back home. I'm kind of bummed at the whole vacation. Would rather just play, like, kicked it with my friends. And come home, and I turn on the radio station to call in. And they're playing It's the End of the World as We Know It over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then I didn't have like anybody's personal number. I just had the number for the station. And finally, I found out that they were changing formats. They fired all the DJs. And it is now a top 40 radio station.
Oh, you're out of a gig.
Yeah, so I'm out of the gig.
So that was their last big revolutionary move to spin that over and over again?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they changed the world.
Before
Omaha stopped.
We'll show those fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
We got one day to do this, man.
Yeah.
So, and then when did the sketch stuff start? You went to college and that kind of shit? I'm just trying to get up to speed.
Let's get up to speed, Mark. I'll truncate this.
Because I know that the movie... What's the whole name? Who needs wedding dates?
Mike and Dave.
Yeah, Mike and Dave need wedding dates. Yeah. The best scene in the movie is probably that first scene.
That opening scene.
I think so.
That bartender brought something pretty special.
Did he? Because I haven't seen it. Now I'm gonna try to believe you. Was it good?
It is. It is really good.
Good.
I'm actually like, it's the first time I've done a few movies, but it's the first one that like I'm proud of.
Right.
Like,
oh, really?
It's
good.
It's for like. Me, like, and I would go see it and actually enjoy it and really think it's funny.
And you, this is like this is a big role.
Yeah, it's my first starring role in a movie.
You and the Efron kid.
Yeah.
That
unknown.
It was very funny to do that because they flew me down for a day.
Yeah.
And we just did that thing. And it's one of the, like, when you do a scene like that, I'm like, I don't think that's going to get it. I don't know what that's going to do. And I have not seen it.
I feel like a lot of times actors will like just blow smoke because they want. To make money so they can make more movies. But, like, yeah, I definitely want it to make money so I can make more movies. But, like, I think people will actually leave the theater going, like, holy shit, that was so funny. It made me laugh as hard as, like, Wedding Crashers made me laugh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's, like, it's a good cast. You got Steven Root in there, and you got you got the girls, Aubrey Plaza and Anna Kendrick, mm-hmm. and you and Zach. And, like, there were other people hanging around. Who else is in it?
Sam Richardson he's on Veep. He plays Sugarland Beard, who like hasn't been in much, but she plays my sister who's getting married.
Yeah.
And she's so fucking funny. and like she trips ball, like they get, like the girls give her ecstasy night before her wedding, and she just loses her mind, and
drug humor, it's all there,
a lot of
sex
drugs.
Humor,
sex, drugs,
Hawaii,
yeah. Sex, drugs in Hawaii.
It's set in Hawaii, right? We didn't just go there to shoot it because it's some budgetary thing.
It's set, budgetarily we had to shoot in Hawaii, but it's set in Atlanta.
They cut the best deal in Honolulu. Gotta go down there.
It's all set in Hawaii. Like that's the sort of plot, is that we take these girls to this Hawaiian vacation, and
that hotel was wild, wasn't it? They had the fucking the fish right in the hotel.
Yeah.
Like the, right
the
outside.
Dolphins.
There were dolphins at the hotel.
It was funny.
And turtle, I think. A turtle or two, maybe?
Yeah, it was funny how sad people got seeing those dolphins.
Every day? Well, you were there for how many weeks?
Yeah, I wasn't sad. I didn't think to be sad until I saw like every like little girl walk past being like, we gotta free the dolphins. And I'm like, oh, shit. I guess we
do. You were
do.
Just like, yeah,
I'm
cool.
Like, cool, look at those dolphins. Should I throw this six-pack ring in there? What would that do?
Oh, look, they're all playing with it.
They're all playing.
What's going
on? It's a toy.
Yeah. That was a wild hotel. But, so after, where'd you start with the sketch stuff that eventually evolved? Because, like, I didn't realize that you kind of, like, were doing a lot of stuff before Workaholics.
Yeah, well, I did stand up like in college. I went out to LA like right after.
Were you a stand up? Was that the thing? It was solo?
Yeah, I did the New Faces Montreal, just for last New Faces in 06.
Oh, okay.
And it was like me and Hannibal Buress. And,
so you had an act?
Yeah. And
were you featuring at clubs and stuff?
Uh huh.
No shit. Were you playing the Midwest?
I remember seeing you back in the day in like 05.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus, this guy's going to kill himself. This guy, poor guy.
You and I are definitely opposite types. There's no doubt about that. Like, you remind me of my roommate in college, Lance, that was just sort of like, you know, kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah, and you're like, this happy good. Fucker.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up.
This guy's okay. Well-adjusted motherfucker. Yeah, definitely different comedic types.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So, but were you featuring and stuff? Were you working as a comic?
Yeah, a little. I was trying to stay. I got offered, but like the feature money is like, it wasn't paying. So
$400 or $500 a week.
Yeah, so I was doing better just staying in town auditioning for like commercials and that bullshit. And I started I booked a few national commercials and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of paying the bills and while I was doing like all the clubs around town.
Yeah.
Especially the improv. I worked at the improv for a couple years from 04 to 06.
Working
as a door guy and answering the phones.
Oh, you were one of those guys?
Yeah.
So you paid your dues over there doing that?
Uh-huh.
Taking calls from comics going, what time am I on?
Yeah. Wait, who's up? Nah, I don't want to come. All right.
What's the lineup?
Hey, how many comps do I get? Honestly, as many as you want. There's no one inside. you're the headliner.
It's no one there. So, all right. So then how does Workaholics happen? Were you doing Funny or Die videos and shit too, or what?
Yeah, it was like kind of right before Funny or Die. Like 06 was like, it was like YouTube had just come out. I started making YouTube videos with the guys from Workaholics that we were all roommates together. We went to...
Here in town?
Yeah, we went to college together for 2 years at Orange Coast Community College, did improv classes.
Yeah.
And I was like, the one with the curly hair, Blake, he had like this cute little afro.
Yeah.
I was like, he's really fucking funny. I should write with him. And so we started writing together and writing a lot of sketches. His best friend was Kyle, who is now our director.
Right.
He wanted to go to film school, so I moved out to LA with him. Met Durs at the Second City.
Here.
When I was taking classes in LA.
Yeah.
And then YouTube just came out in 06, and we were all roommates, and we were like, let's make YouTube videos. This is perfect for us. And so we made like 80, 90 YouTube videos
in the course
of a couple years. And then I did stand-up for Comedy Central Live at Gotham.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, what else are you doing? And I'm like, I have all these internet videos. Please watch them. No one's watching them. and then they gave us a show.
And that was the birth of it.
Yeah.
So that's you're a creator of that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you guys write all of them still?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, I'm out of the writer's room talking to you right now. They're pissed.
Oh, are they really?
No.
So this is good. So you did all right for yourself.
Yeah, so far, man. I don't know.
I mean, it's been...
The movie's premiering tonight. We'll see. Hopefully people go see it.
How many seasons of Workaholics were there?
We're still doing it. We're doing the last season right now. It's season 7.
This is it, though?
Yeah,
we've decided.
So. Yeah,
it's on you. You're like, how many times?
They wanted us to do one more, but we're all kind of to the point that
are all the other guys doing as well as you though? They got other things going.
Yeah, they're all doing stuff, and we're doing a movie. We're doing a movie with Seth Rogen's producing it with us and Scott.
Workaholics
Rubin.
Movie.
Yeah, it stars the three of us, but it's not Workaholics. It's like the three of us. We're hotel maids, and our hotel gets taken over by terrorists, and we gotta diehard the situation. We're three dumb John McClanes, basically.
I get it. Rudin's producing it?
Uh-huh, and Seth Rogen.
And who's going to direct it? Your guy?
Kyle, yeah.
Oh, that's exciting, man.
Yeah, so we're kind of, we love working together, but we don't want to do Workaholics for so long that people are like, that fucking show's
still on?
Yeah.
Where you just kind of, everything becomes way over the top.
Yeah.
And like you guys are like traveling now and shit. Like,
yeah, we no longer like ride in our shitty car. Somehow we won the lottery and we all ride those Can-Am Spiders and those motorcycles with three wheels.
Be a different show.
Yeah.
Well, I saw you in The Intern. That was,
yeah, it was cool, man. It was
working with De Niro. Nice guy.
Yeah, cool. Like,
were you nervous?
Yeah. You know, I was. It was, he's Robert De Niro, but he's cool. I think, like, if you aren't like, oh, yeah, right. Robert De Niro around him.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just have a conversation with him, he's really cool.
Yeah, he's like kind of a quiet guy, right?
Yeah, he's super quiet. Like, he'll never be like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, right.
Like,
right. Just kind of mind
his own
business.
You have to be like, yeah. You know, you have to try to start. We had a running bit where it was like, he doesn't laugh.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a silent laugh.
Right.
But he like just sort of
jiggles. Yeah.
And so the running bit that I had with some of the other actors was like, hey, time me, see how long it takes for me to get De Niro jiggling. Because he would laugh. He would. He was like, he wasn't like stingy with it.
Right, right.
But it was just a gentle jiggle. And so it'd be like, hey, 45 seconds, pretty good. You got it, you know.
So, this movie, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, right?
Yeah.
I'm in it. Just want to make that clear. I'm in the opening scene. I want to make that clear.
So, buy a ticket. Watch the opening scene.
And if you don't like
it,
you can split.
Give us your money.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it looks like it's set up to be a pretty big summer movie, and everyone's excited about it. And I'm trying to find out whether or not I was overlooked for the premiere, because I don't recall...
You should be invited. If you're not, I'm going to have some words, Mark.
With Jake?
I'm going to have a word or two.
It's Jake, his name, right?
Yeah, Jake Szymanski, the director. He actually texted me on the way over here. Say, I hear you're doing Mark's podcast. And
he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
What was the other movie he directed before this one?
He didn't. This is his first feature.
Oh, so he was a Funny or Die guy?
Yeah, he was a funnier. He was like employee number one at Funny or Die,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. It was like day one of Funny or Die being a thing.
Yeah.
And he was making like YouTube videos, much like I was.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first people to upload a video. And Adam McKay and Will Ferrell at that point were watching every video that was uploaded because it's a brand new site.
Right.
They just did it that day. So they're like, well, watch all the things. And they really liked him. And they were like, well, we got to start hiring people. What about this kid? Brought him in. And I think McKay kind of took him under his wing a little bit and showed him the ropes. And
hilarious.
He's great, man. I would love to make 10 movies with him. He's like the best.
How was working with Zach? Is that all right?
Yeah, it was good. He's like, it kind of sucks because he's like, not only is he the handsomest guy in the world, like women just like fall over.
Right.
just like gush.
I remember, like, because I don't work in a lot of movies. I do the TV thing a bit, but he's pretty effortless. Like, I forget that, like, some of these actors, because I mean, maybe you're like me. There's part of you, like, when you're on camera, you're, hey, I'm this guy. I'm talking at this level. You know, we're talking like this. And then you see guys like, I imagine De Niro or someone who's a straight actor like Zach. They're just, hey, what's going on? And you're like, shouldn't you speak up?
Oh, both Zach and De Niro as well. But De Niro, especially during The Intern, I was like, is he giving anything?
Yeah.
Like, he's acting like he's never been in a movie before. Hey, you got to make more faces.
And then you watch it and you're like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
Why doesn't he make a ton of funny faces
when you're there?
Like I try to do.
Right. It's weird though, right? And then you watch it and you're like, he makes a lot of faces.
Yeah.
How did I not notice the
faces? Yeah. He makes faces at the perfect time.
Well, good luck with the movie. I hope it does well.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Yep. All right, well, that was fun. Glad to talk to him, but jury's in. Was not invited. Was not invited to the premiere. I don't know if I was forgotten about, or perhaps the guy who starts the movie out strong doesn't get an invite to the premiere. But I have heard that it's a funny movie. I've seen it on the Twitter. I've seen people mention that it's a funny movie. I will see the movie, primarily because I'm in it. All right? Okay. So now I want to share this conversation I had with John Caponera. John Caponera, like, look, when I was a kid working at the Comedy Store, when I was just a kind of a long-haired, sweaty, drugged-up little Jewish kid, 22 years old, working the door at the Comedy Store, hanging out with devils and monsters and gypsies and pirates, doing the yayo, staying up all night talking about nothing. He was one of these dudes that would come in. I knew he was from Chicago, but he would come in, get up on stage, do a solid spot, tight material, physical, funny, high energy, you know, real pro. And then he did this amazing thing. He just left. Didn't hang out with the freaks. Didn't get involved with all the swigging and the snorting and the insanity. And I kind of respected that. I didn't understand it. I was like, what do you mean? He's not going to hang out? Why doesn't that guy hang out? That was always like this judgment. Well, that guy doesn't hang out? Wow, what's up with that? Well, maybe he has a life. Maybe he wants to have a future. Maybe he doesn't want to, you know, get involved with some stupid bullshit and stay up for 3 days yammering to dummies who think they're changing things. But Caponera was always a great comic. He's been out there doing it for like 30 years. And I thought it would be good to talk to him. I ran into him. I thought, let's see what John's up to. And he's written a book. It's called A Life in Comedy. You can get it on Amazon. And he's a good guy, and he's a real deal. So this is me talking to John Caponera. You know, it's weird. I have interesting memories of you. Interesting memories. Here's the memory I have that was like kind of hilarious, is that I was at the Comedy Store. I was a doorman. And my job sometimes was to drive comics to Burbank Airport so they could go to the Dunes to do the Comedy Store at the Dunes.
And you had to drive Mitzi and the...
I drive sometimes. I didn't drive Mitzi. That was a Schubert job.
Oh, okay.
I drove the Jeep, but I had to pick you guys up. And one time I'd been up all night with fucking dumb Sam Kennison. I'm fucking still high on coke and probably drunk. And I got to drive you and Mendoza to the fucking airport. And I... And
to this day, I hate you.
No, I would think you would hate me, but you probably don't remember it. I was like literally sweating drugs, and there was no fucking gas, and I was late. And you and Mendoza are like, what the fuck? And I'm like, I got no gas. I was barely keeping it together, awake. And I just remember you guys, what is going on? And I'm like, yeah, sorry, man. It was just, to me, it was really represented the two different types of comic. You know, that whatever the fuck I was doing up there with all the drugs and all the bullshit, there was definitely those two camps at the Comedy Store at that time. And you were like this straight up kind of working class guy doing comedy. And then we were a bunch of fucking lunatics. Did you ever feel that there at that time?
Well, you know what? I lucked out at the Comedy Store. I got to tell you why. When I came out in 85 to do Star Search,
yeah.
I went down and did an audition down in... Indianapolis. So me and Larry Reed and a couple guys
Reed.
From Chicago, we
yeah.
drove down to Indianapolis,
yeah.
did the audition. They call me a couple months later. I'd forgotten about it. They go, yeah, you want to do the show?
For Star Search?
For Star Search, yeah, back yeah. in 85. It was like its second year it was on.
Was that the year? When was Lubell on? When was that Lubell on? The year yeah. after you or something?
He might have been on the year after me. They put us up right next to the Comedy Store at the Hyatt.
Right.
And it's my first day in L.A. You know, I don't know anybody out
here. Yeah, yeah.
I know some comics, but yeah. really nobody. So next, I go in there that night. I go, oh, hey, the Comedy Store's next door. Maybe I could do my spot and work on it for tomorrow yeah. night show. So yeah. I go in there, and I said to the doorman, I said, listen, is there any way I can get up tonight? I'm doing Star Search tomorrow night. And he gives me the once-over, and he goes, and he says, I think we can get you up a little later. So I'm hanging out.
Yeah.
I get up. I do 10 minutes. I have a nice set. And I come in the back of the room, and they say, Mitzi wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's Mitzi? Well, it's the owner, right? And she goes, John, are you out here for good? Are you just here to do the show? I said, no, Mitzi, I moved out. I my little Corolla, I packed it up, and I'm going to give this a shot, you know?
Yeah.
She said, call in Monday for spots.
Yeah.
Well, everyone starts shaking my hand and pat me on the back, and I'm thinking, what's the big deal? And I think, well, there's guys working the door here for 2 years trying to become a paid regular, and she just made you a paid regular. And you know, I come to find out, you know, I became friends with Jimmy Stewart. I would see him after the shows all the time. We'd hang out, and he'd pick my brain. And, and I said, Jim, you know, I happen to lucked out, you know, that she made me a paid regular. But you know what? I've been doing this 7 years. I'm headlining all over the Midwest. I just, you want to get on stage. You want to start in L.A. I goes, look who's on stage right now. Robin Williams is on.
Yeah.
I goes, you know who's on after him? Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
I look at the list. You know who's on after him? Paul Rodriguez. Yeah. I goes, you can't get stage time.
Yeah.
I goes, you got to find a place you can go and be bad.
Yeah.
You got to find a place where you can cut your teeth and just hone your act and get up on stage. It's all a trial and error. It's all about stage time.
Well, yeah.
You're trying to start in L.A. where it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Sure enough, he moved to Florida. He started working all the Florida circuit down there. He come back 2 years later, and he was kicking ass. He got
Is that what he did?
Yeah. He went to Florida.
What year was that? 80 what?
Oh, man.
When you moved out here?
I moved out here in 85, so I was talking him this stuff like 85, 86. He might have moved back.
Right.
Or in 87 or something.
No shit.
Came back in like 90 or whatever.
So he listened
to you. Kicking ass.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I goes, Jim, you always had it in you. You just never had time to work it out.
And you get stuck in the politics of that weird dark hole.
Yes, exactly.
Because as soon as you got past, there was 20 guys going, who the fuck is John Campanera?
Oh, yeah. all the doormen are like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I felt a little resentment from them. But at the same time, it's like, dude, you know, I came out here with an act. It wasn't like I just showed up and said, hey, give me a shot.
Who was on the schedule then in like in the mid-80s, let's say 85, 86, when you were at the store, when you first got there? Who was
coming
around?
Well, Sam was there. Carl LeBeau was there.
Yeah, the dark forces.
You know, Louis Anderson was on all the time.
Yep. Remember those guys like Joey Kamen?
Joey Kamen, Harry Basil.
Yeah.
You know.
Steve Odenkirk before he became a big
Steve Odenkirk, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Damon Wayans. Dice, Karen Haber, Joan Hart.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you were working the door, you remember.
But I got there in 80. Oh, yeah, I guess so. Like, oh, yeah, okay. So I got there in 87. 80, so it wasn't that long after you.
And I lucked out because she took a liking to me and she started working me at the Dunes in Vegas.
Yeah, I drove you.
She started working me in San Diego.
Yeah.
You know, so I was getting work from her. Plus, I had work from the Midwest. You know,
well, you were lucky because, you know, you were set. You know, you knew who you were up there. You knew who you were in life. She couldn't fuck with your head too much. Yeah, there was always guys around that like were, you know, sort of impenetrable by that weirdness because that place is weird. But for you walk in, I'm like, how come he doesn't feel it? How come he isn't like going crazy? Like, because all of us who were sitting around at the door and doing drugs, and that place was this haunted shithole that had its own meaning. Like, we were talking about ghosts and about the history of the place, but you're like, it's a comedy club.
I wasn't there long enough to get involved in the politics.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. I was green.
But you also came and went, right? You did your show and you left, right? You didn't hang out too much, did you?
No, you know what? I hung around for comics I like to watch.
Yeah.
And then if I saw the lineup and I saw that it, you know, I didn't care for them, I'd split, you know. But, you know, I got on every night there and, you know, and that was awesome. It was like my home away from home. Chicago is where I started.
It is. That's where you grew up.
I grew up in Chicago. I started doing comedy there in 79.
Wait, like where? What part of Chicago? I've become sort of fascinated with Chicago.
It's
because
a great town.
It's great.
It really is.
Like I always knew it was its own thing, but now I taped a special there.
You probably have a huge following there. Yeah,
great comedy town.
It is such a great comedy. And that's where I cut my teeth because they're a good comedy town because they give you the benefit of the doubt. They want you to do well, but they're very sharp.
Right.
And
right.
They get all the subtleties.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're smart,
It's a smart town as far as comedy. Well, they got Second City.
Yeah.
Was 3 doors down from Zany's, where I started.
Downtown.
Yeah, so I'd hook up with all the Second City people right down the street at the bars afterwards.
Right, right.
And we'd all hang out, you know?
Right.
I knew Farley and all those guys.
Did you?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't tight with him because they always hammered by the time I got to talk to him. You know, he wasn't coherent by the time I got to the bar. He was already hammered.
You were tight with him, but he didn't remember. You guys had a long friendship, and you talked a lot, but it was always in the blackout for him.
Yeah, but, you know, we'd all go to the blues bar down the street from Zany's and Second City. Yes. My sister was in Second City.
Cindy.
You know Cindy? Yeah. She went through the whole thing. So all her friends were, you know, like Bill Murray's brother, Joel Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I don't know
and
that brother.
Steve Carell.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And all these guys, Odenkirk.
Yeah.
You know, they were all in the same group, and they'd all go to the same bar, and all the comics from Zany's would hang with these guys.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a great hang, you know, but...
Is it just the two of you in the family? Just you
no,
and
I got four sisters and another brother, so... They're,
oh, really?
My dad, Irish Catholic.
Really?
Well, my dad's all Italian, my mom's Irish, but we had six kids, and... He was a fireman. My dad was a fireman in Chicago.
So you were like real blue collar Chicago.
Yeah.
That's what you grew up in.
I was the south side of Chicago. I grew up like six blocks from Comiskey Park.
Uh-huh.
We were 10 minutes from the Loop.
Yeah.
Right off the Dan Ryan.
Yeah, yeah.
Down the Loop. But it was all blue collar neighborhood, carpenters, plumbers, cops. You know, my neighborhood was the Stockyards. Back in the day, the Stockyards was right down the street from my house.
The meat stockyards. Yeah.
And eventually in 72, it moved to Oklahoma or something.
But you remember it?
I was 12 years old. It was right down the street from my house. You could throw a rock, and it was where all the pens were, where they kept all the cows and the pigs and the slaughterhouse.
Right there?
It was right there. We'd be playing baseball, and all of a sudden a cow would run back. That got loose from the pens and would run by our...
Yeah,
our park. And we're like, a cow's by the park. And eventually, the Stockyards left, and they put it was it became a big industrial park. But that was right down the street from
Isn't
my house.
Where
was
you
the
have those memories?
My whole neighborhood smelled like shit. My whole life, it smelled like cow shit. You knew you got into our neighborhood when you smelled the cow shit.
How long did that stay around after they got rid of the cows? It stays, doesn't it?
Oh, it did. Probably lingered for a couple of years. But I could throw a rock.
Yeah.
And right in front of the International Amphitheater was, you know, I was only a block away. That's where they had the big riots in 68.
No shit.
Yeah.
So the history, man.
It's a history. There's a lot of history there in that neighborhood. And stuff.
But your dad was a union guy, right?
Oh, yeah. My dad was a fireman. And all my cousins are electricians. They're all big union guys back there. You know, they swear by it.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. It's a union town.
It's a big union town.
So what? And now, as a kid of a fireman, was that exciting? I mean, did you get to go on the truck and shit?
Oh yeah, yeah. We'd go to the firehouse.
Was it one of those old kind with the pole and everything?
He actually for 15 years he was a captain over at the firehouse in Chinatown where they shot Backdraft.
Oh, really?
He was the captain of that firehouse.
Oh, was he on set and shit? Did he?
He got to see him filming stuff and everything.
Did he think they got it right? Did he see?
Well,
the movie?
He wasn't a consultant, but I'm sure they used consultants.
But did he watch the movie?
Yeah.
And did he think it was?
Yeah, what? Yeah. He liked it.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
good.
He liked it. He liked it. But he's still living. My dad. He's 82. He retired a chief. So I told you. I said, Dad, you're one of the few guys that are actually able to milk the system, you know, and get something out of you. Usually, you retire and you croak the next day and you never get that money you put into
it.
Yeah,
he got it, though, huh? He got his pension. He's still spending it.
Still spending
it. Does he still live in the house he grew up in?
Yes.
No shit.
In fact, when I go back there,
uh-huh.
I stay with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I stay in the same house we grew up in.
Oh, my God. That's so sweet.
That's when I was 2 years old, yeah.
Same room?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Is your shit still in there? Is it?
No. Actually, he remodeled a little bit. So,
uh-huh.
But it's the same house. And it's funny, you know, what's different about the neighborhoods back there is my house, I knew everybody on the block.
Right.
For one thing.
Sure.
You know, I knew everybody in the neighborhood. I could go down every block and tell you what kid lived there.
Right. Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Now, you come out to L.A., I don't even meet my neighbor until there's an earthquake and everyone's out in front. And you go, oh, you're my neighbor. How
it's
you doing?
A weird thing.
Isn't it weird?
Well, the thing I think that's different is that it's generations of people live in a place. So a lot of times, like I bet in the neighborhood in Chicago, you knew their families, your parents knew their families, you knew when, what's his name's father died or when the kid graduated. Like there was a, like, you know,
community.
Right.
It was
like
a village.
Right. And then sometimes you go over to the other kid's house when your parents were away or whatever, like everyone took care of each other. Like my grandparents' neighbors, you know, and it doesn't, up here, I know my neighbors, but usually it's just this sort of like, could you keep an eye on the thing so that, you know,
yeah. You're not tight. Like, my my house next door, my sister lives next door.
Cindy was next to you where?
No, over? No, I'm talking, I'm sorry. My house in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
This is the difference.
Right.
In Chicago, my sister lived next door with her family. Next door to my dad's place, my cousin lives.
Right.
You know, which is my dad's niece.
Right.
Across the street, three other nieces, my dad's, my uncle's daughters.
See, wait, you're saying you lived in an entire neighborhood of Campaneras.
I'm telling you, the whole block is inundated with Campaneras. And my grandmother lived a block away.
Yeah.
My other grandmother lived two blocks away. You know, so there was a real village. So if you had to leave and go, hey, watch my kid. I got to run to Home Depot. Someone could watch it.
Yeah.
I don't have that honor. I have three kids. And we could never get a sitter. My wife wouldn't trust anybody because
who knows?
We didn't have a village,
right?
And it makes it so much harder.
Well, that's why people don't leave. That's why they don't leave their hometowns a lot of the times. And like I know a kid, you know, Nate Bargatze, funny guy, he's a comic from Nashville, and he's doing okay out here. But he moved to Nashville because her parents are down the street, his parents are down the street, and it makes life nice and easy. And the kids have a relationship with their grandparents.
Yeah, and you know what? And that's one thing my kids didn't get, which I wish they could have had, because I had that.
Yeah.
And I had 35 cousins just from my mom. My mom had seven brothers and sisters. They all had five kids.
Right.
I had just 35 cousins on my mom's side.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not even my dad's side.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And they're all around. They're all in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, you know, you grow up with so much community and family, and it's one thing my kids didn't get out here. You know,
because
so
you got to travel.
Every time we went back to Chicago, they got to see all their cousins.
Right.
And they loved it, you know, but because I was out here and my wife's mother was out here and she didn't want to move back there and everything,
right.
We stayed. But
yeah.
it's hard. You know, there's a thing in my book. I have a...
What's the name of the book?
It's called A Life in Comedy.
It's available on Amazon?
It's on Amazon.com. Yeah, it's a download.
Mm-hmm.
You can download it on any iPad or iPhone.
Now, when did you write it?
I wrote it while I was not doing the cruise ships. I had a lot of downtime doing ships.
Yeah.
So the last couple of years, I would just sit in my room and write whatever came to my mind.
What were you saying was in there? Do you remember?
Well, I have a whole chapter on, it's called Stand-Up Comedy, A Single Man's Game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, our profession is really cut out for somebody who's single.
Yeah, or a bad married guy.
Yeah, or a bad married guy or a married guy with no kids whose wife doesn't work and can travel with
you. Right,
right. You know what I'm saying?
Because, just to babysit you, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Once you have that first kid, now you got to juggle time in, time away. She's bitching that you're gone too much. You're bitching that if I don't work, we can't feed the family.
Yeah.
And it becomes a big juggling act, and there's a lot of stress on both sides. And the fact that we were able to hold it together for, you know, 25 years.
Doing all right.
It's a minor miracle.
Yeah, it really is.
Not really. Not really.
I'm sorry, buddy.
And plus the fact that, you know, I'm trying to mend relationships with my kids because I was gone a lot, you know.
Oh, really?
There's a story in my book I talk about, you know, I miss so many Little League games and so many recitals and so much. And it kills you. And it's those things that you don't get back in life.
Right.
You can't get that back.
Yeah.
Once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There was one particular moment. I just remember I'm in Bumfuck, Michigan, you know, at a Red Roof Inn.
Yeah.
And it's snowing outside. It's March.
Yeah.
And I'm the closest, you know, theater or mall is 2 miles away. I don't have a car. So I'm sitting there watching it snow. And my wife, I'm on the phone with my wife. And my two sons are in a Little League game in the Sherman Oaks Little League Championship game. And she's giving me play-by-play on the phone, telling me it's 3-2. There's a man on third. She's announcing the game to me. And I'm listening. And all I remember is hanging up the phone and crying myself to sleep because I wasn't there to see my two sons playing the championship
game.
That's
brutal, man.
And so a lot of the book talks about the loneliness of the job.
Yeah, how old are they now?
They're 20 and 18.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. They both went to Lox, the fine arts school out here.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the fame of
New
York.
Yeah, and what's their thing?
They were in the drama department.
No kidding.
So they, my one kid's, he's working at Big Five now, trying to become an actor. He's taking a year off from college.
Working at Sporting Goods Place?
Yeah. Just to make a little money while he's trying to act, you know.
Well, that's the thing about you, and I was excited to talk to you, is that you're a guy that, you know, you're a grounded dude, you're a solid dude, you got a solid act, you know, you've had opportunities come and go, but you're still out there fucking doing it because you have to.
Yeah, you know, I always prided myself on being a provider, and no matter what it took, you know, I knew that I had to make a certain nut every month to make ends meet and to pay my mortgage and everything else, and you know, at the same time, I missed acting and I missed being in town, but I didn't have the luxury when I was a single guy to just stay and audition.
Right.
And say, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to take the next couple months off and go on pilot season, go
you,
out.
You could do that then.
You know, I could do that. Yeah. Then, you know, but once the kids hit and you had to make a certain amount of money, you know, whether it's on the road or at a cruise ship or whatever, you know, corporate
yeah.
date,
yeah.
you got to make the bread, you right. know, voiceover, whatever you had to yeah. do, right?
Right, right.
And I always, the last 30 years, I've been fighting the, you know, juggling the two, because if you're gone, they just go down the list. Oh, get so, call so-and-so in for, to read for the part. Sure. Captain Air's not around.
Right.
And then if I stay home and I don't get the part, I don't feed my family that month.
Right.
And I don't pay my mortgage.
Right.
So that, you know, for 30 years trying to juggle that.
It's crazy, man.
It really is. And it's paid its toll. It's paid its toll on my relationships with my family, my wife, and,
yeah.
and everything else, you know. But my dad was a real worker. My mom, you know, so I always prided myself on being a, you know, a provider.
Yeah, you got a working class ethic about it.
There's a working class ethic about it, and I was, you know, I'll admit I wasn't the nurturing guy, you know.
Yeah.
And I left that to my wife, and,
right?
You know, and now I'm paying the price because I have, you know, these. I'm trying to rebuild my relationships with my kids.
Yeah, how bad are they? Are they real mad at you, or just a little mad at you?
No, I have a really good relationship with my son. My other son just got a rehab. He's trying to rebuild his life again. 4.0 student.
Oh yeah.
And I'm pulling for him. And yeah. my daughter's acting out now in school because yeah. you know, my wife and I are going through a tough time, and she's ditching classes and this and that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So you know, I have to be home more now to try and mend those things. And as a life of a stand-up comic, when you're married with kids, it becomes really hard.
Sure, know? Man. Well, let's go through, like, so when you started, how old were you when you started?
I was 22, right out of college.
That you just knew you wanted to do that?
Well, no, I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And my senior year in college, we had a class called Advanced Public Speaking.
Yeah.
And for our final, all the kids had to do a comedy monologue.
Right.
And the teacher didn't care if you ripped off Pryor or right. Carlin, as long yeah. as you committed to the material.
Right.
And I used to do impressions at the time as a yeah. goof off.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to do my own thing. So yeah. I put a bunch of impressions
into
a game of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember. It was like the Cagney Capers versus the Sullivan Shoes.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember one bit at the end of it, the Cagney's arguing with the with Ed Sullivan. He goes, what do you mean he's already shaving? He's got to be one of the other, doesn't he? He goes, I don't know. He slid in and he dragged the ball. He picked the ball real quick and he tamped. Everything's happening too fast. What the hell's going on anymore? Why, you silly son of a bitch. You're making these calls out of your ass. So it was all these different yeah, impressions. Yeah. And the kids in the class were laughing their ass off.
Right.
You know? And, you know, I got a nice grade for it and everything. And a day later, this kid from the class comes up to me and says, hey, John. He goes, man, that was really funny. He goes, you know, they're doing a gong show down the street in Joliet. And I goes, what are you telling me for? He goes, well, why don't you do that thing you did in class? I goes, that was for a grade. I'm not a stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, but it was very funny. So we go over there and I enter this gong show. I won $500 in this stupid bar having a gong show.
And you're like 18?
I was 22.
Oh, so after, okay, yeah.
That was my senior year. I was going to graduate in a month.
Right.
So anyway, I graduate a month later. I'm playing softball in a league in Chicago. We go to the bar that sponsors us. We're all sitting there in our uniforms drinking. And they got a little gong show going on at the bar that night.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there in my uniform watching them going, you know what? I think I'm better than half these people. So I get up and I do the little bullshit thing I wrote for class.
Yeah.
And I won another $500. So within a month, I won $1,000 doing a stupid thing I wrote for class.
Yeah.
And this kid comes up to me afterwards. You know, I never had $1,000 in my whole college career. I was always broke.
Right.
He says, hey, man, there's a comedy club in Lyons just outside of Chicago. It's 20 minutes from my house. They have open mic night every Thursday. They sprinkle in the open micers with the regulars, and you get to do 5 minutes. You should check it out. So I go to the comedy room. I get up. They put me up in between, like, Ted Holum and Arsenio Hall, you know, and I go.
Who were locals then?
Who were locals?
Yeah,
who were starting out. I mean, they were like the pros at the
right,
time.
Right.
And I do my little 5 minute bit that I wrote for class.
Yeah,
and it was so bad because it was like, ladies and gentlemen, imagine if you will, a bunch of celebrities getting together for a game of baseball.
Right.
I think it would go something like this.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to talk to the crowd. I didn't know. All I knew was.
But you knew that that was a standard intro to a bunch of impersonations.
Yeah, exactly.
You saw that on TV.
Well, I did five plays in college. I was a theater. I was a communications major that did a lot of theater.
Yeah.
So I was used to being up in front of an audience.
Were you a comedy fan?
Yeah, I was a big Carlin and Pryor fan at the time, but I wasn't used to being up there by myself with the onus on me to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would present it like, and then I would hide behind the characters.
Sure.
I didn't know how to set up rapport with the crowd
and
talk to them and riff.
You just did the act.
I just went in and I just hid behind these characters.
And it worked.
And the guy says, hey, man, I like what you did. Why don't you go back on the weekends? And then he started giving me gas money. And then eventually the older guys would take me on the road and let me open for
him. Like who first?
Like Ted Holum, Ed Fiala, Emo Phillips, Judy Tenuta. And eventually, I wanted to be an actor. But this kind of thing started snowballing for me. And for a whole year, I did that bit. That's all I... Finally, I said, fuck, I got to do something else. If I can't prove I can be funny without doing an impression, I'm getting out of this.
Yeah.
So I just started writing my own monology stuff.
Yeah.
But, and I started living and dying with it. And I died 1,000 deaths.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be known as just an impressionist.
Right. Well, I didn't even realize, because by the time I saw you at the Comedy Store, it was all about your life.
Exactly.
Like I remember one bit where you're measuring something.
Yeah.
What was the setup on that?
Well, I used to work on the docks.
Yeah.
In Chicago, loading trucks.
Did you?
Yeah.
Were you a union guy?
In college.
Yeah.
In college.
Did you get in the union?
Yeah, they ended up working me one day too late, and they had to put me in the union. In college, because if you work 30 days, you had to join the union.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they forgot it. I snuck in. Anyway, it was one of these jobs where you just loaded trucks, right?
Yeah.
But there were some real characters on the job, you know?
Yeah.
And the one guy worked with, like, he was a measuring nut.
Yeah.
You know, he had a tape measure in his back pocket.
Right.
You know, it's like, Louis, what are you doing? You know, we're loading trucks. We're not measuring shit. You know, what the fuck? What's a measuring thing?
Yeah.
You know, he's one of these guys that walks in the house and goes, hey, what kind of trim did you use up there, John? Is that 3 3/4, 3 1/2? I'll be a son of a... He starts measuring shit. You know, his head's going back and forth. That's 3 7/8. I'll be a son of a bitch. You can't get that shit no more. They quit making that in 68. That's a custom job. It's like, who gives a shit? You know, and then there was another guy. He was the direction nut. You know, he would ask you where you went over the weekend just to tell you how you got there.
Yeah,
what'd you do Saturday, John? You know, none of them had teeth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they had no teeth. They're all smoking Camels.
Right.
What'd you do Saturday, John? Yeah. I did it. I went golfing out at Glen Eagles. Glen Eagles? Wait a minute. That's off 171, isn't it? Hold on. Wait a second. That's Archer Avenue, right? Wait a minute. What'd you take? 94? 94 to 55 South, 55 South to Kingery, 171, 171, Archer over. I've been there before, sure, Glen Eagles. Takes about a half a six pack. I'll be a son of a bitch.
But that one impression, like the Drew Carey, or not Drew Carey, the Harry Carey, you did for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, Harry Carey was a local celebrity in Chicago back in the 80s when I was growing up, he was the announcer for the White Sox.
Right.
He had just come over from St. Louis because they kicked him out because he was banging Augie Bush's son's wife. So he gets a job with the White Sox. And, you know, at the time he was only a local celebrity because he wasn't with the Cubs yet with WGN.
Yeah.
So I would do him in my act. Only in Chicago people knew him.
Right.
But then he got on GN with the Cubs and went nationwide. So now I could do the impression anywhere I went.
Right.
But Harry was great because the game was incidental to the story he was telling.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, you know, I was on Rush Street last night. I closed the one bar. Went across the street at the taco at that greasy spoon, and there's the throw to first. Anyway, you know, I had too many jalapeno peppers. That's a fastball off Grace's head, both benches empty. And so I go back to my place. I took a dump, and my asshole's killing me. There's a play at the plate, the nearest steals home. And I'm thinking, man, I should have had some ice cream. Maybe if that came out first, my asshole wouldn't be bugging me. You know, I mean, I would just sprinkle it.
But you could just go on for an hour.
I could go on for an hour with that.
So, okay, so here you are.
Oh, fuck.
You're running around. You're running around Chicago. You're getting big. Were you getting big in Chicago?
Oh yeah, I started headlining all over Chicago. I started to develop a following, and you know what happened is I started working Zanies in the early '80s.
Yeah.
And when the club took off in the mid '80s, it got started real popular.
Right.
It started selling out every night, and then I just started hitting road and making, you know, headlining all over the Midwest.
Now, who were the guys? See, the weird thing about this, about that era, is that was the real comedy boom. That was the club boom in the early '80s, right? I mean, that was when everything started happening. New clubs were happening in everywhere, and all the guys that we know now, you know, some of the bigger guys are. We're all starting out. So they're all running around. Johansson, Jenny, all those guys were touring the country around the same time you were, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I would run into comics that I work with from New York. And when I realized I wanted to move to New York or L.A., you know, and when I first started out, I didn't have the money to do that.
Yeah.
And eventually, I built up a nice kitty from headlining and everything. And I had to decide, do I want to go to New York or L.A.? Then when Star Search called, I said, well, maybe this is an omen to move to L.A.
Right.
And I realized all the comics that I worked with from New York were out in L.A. I said, well, that just...
Like, who are your friends?
Well, I just ran, you know, like different guys that I worked with in New York, like Rick Overton and stuff like that, that ended up moving moving to L.A. I'm thinking, well, if they're moving to L.A. and they're from New York, I might as well just go, you know... Cut out the middleman and go right out to L.A.
And you'd had all this road experience.
Yeah.
Mostly headlining, middling. You did all of it, right?
Yeah, Indianapolis and Chicken Detroit. Patty. And,
you work for Chicken Patty over at in Indy?
Yeah.
You remember Chick and Patty?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. And then I worked the Crackers and I worked, Ridley's Place. And I worked all over the Indianapolis and Detroit and Ohio, all over Ohio. You know, Hilarities, Wiley's Comedy Club in Dayton.
Yeah.
And I cut my teeth in a lot of places. And you know what else is cool is when I first started out, my brother worked at Midway Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a buddy pass.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to fly to a lot of places for free just to show him my goods.
Holy shit.
Where, you know, instead of driving 7 hours, I fly in an hour, go up that night just to showcase and fly home.
That's a sweet deal.
So I was able to come back and establish crowds around the Midwest just because my brother worked for Midway. So another way to get started.
Wait, how long did he work for them?
Just a couple years.
Yeah.
But it was enough for me to establish myself in a lot of clubs.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, yeah. So,
is Cindy the only one that ended up in show business other than you?
Cindy, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but you know what? Growing up, we were my grandfather was a big singer.
Yeah.
You know, he cut a couple albums back in the day in the 50s.
Your 40s. Father's father?
My mother's father.
Oh, yeah?
Jumpin' Red Cassidy.
Oh, yeah?
And, you know, and all the get-togethers we had, he sang at everything.
Yeah.
You know? And he's a real showman, a real vaudeville guy.
Yeah.
A real jokester.
Yeah.
And I think every get-together we had, whether it was Easter, St. Paddy's Day, Christmas, whatever, he performed.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his kids sang. So it was like 10 Max Amateur Hour.
Yeah.
And I think growing up and seeing that, and I couldn't sing, so I did impressions. And,
yeah.
And to get the laughter from all the family members,
sure,
it just encouraged you growing up. And my sister played guitar. My brother sang. My other sister sang. So I think growing up, and that's a chapter in my book talking about how I think showbiz got in my blood early on.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I was in college that a teacher asked me to audition for one of the plays he was directing, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I went to college to play baseball. And this guy pulls me aside and says, hey, man, I think you'd be great for this play.
McMurtry?
No, the Billy Bibbit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I said, I never acted. He goes, yeah, but I like what you're doing in my oral interpretation class, and I think you'd be good for this part. So I said, I'll give it a shot. I was flattered, you know? Yeah. And I got the part of Billy Bibbit. And the thing was a huge success on campus, and I ended up getting the acting bug.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up doing 5 more plays in college, and I wanted to be an actor when I came out of college, and I didn't have the money to move to L.A., New York, so I started doing the stand-up circuit.
Isn't that something? So you gave up on the baseball dream?
Yeah, I ran my coach my sophomore year. I needed classes and didn't know it, and I wasn't catching the ball coming off the bat until he was on top of me.
Yeah.
And I made a few errors at short, and he stopped playing me. And I'm like, fuck, if I'm going to sit on the bench all this time and not play and swat flies and swat mosquitoes. Yeah. You know, and at the same time, this teacher had approached me, and all of a sudden, I went from playing baseball to be one of the theater guys.
Yeah, that's wild. You know, you're the one jock among the theater.
Yeah. They're all like, "You a theater fag now?" All of a sudden, you're a theater. He goes, "Hey, you get more pussy if you're not the gay guy in the theater." Then, you know who gets more pussy on the cruise ship is the one dancer that's not gay.
Yeah,
and he's banging all the other hot dancers. Like, who's the fool now?
Yeah, right. You and your judgments.
Yeah.
So you come out here for Star Search, and where'd you come in on Star Search?
I went up against Jenny Jones, right? So we're in the semifinals. Right?
Yeah.
And we both do our bits, and we're waiting for the judges to tally the votes.
Yeah.
And Ed McMahon turns to Jenny, says, "Now, Jenny, remember Thursday bloopers? She was going to be doing the bloopers and blunders show with Dick Clark and Ed McMahon." And I'm like, what the fuck? She's already in cahoots with this guy? I have a snowball's chance of winning this. And no sooner did that thought come to mind. And the winner's Jenny Jones by audience decision.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, well, anyway. So it's so funny. A few months later, it's ironic that I ended up working with her at a club in Tampa.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be headlining.
Can't follow you.
She can't follow me.
Because
she has 20 minutes to her name, and then she's doing the other 20 minutes of Q&A.
Oh, really?
She can't fulfill the 45 minutes.
Right.
And Ronnie Bullard's opening the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie's a funny guy.
Yeah.
So by the next night, I'm headlining. She's in the middle, and Ronnie's still opening. Well, by the end of the week, Ronnie's in the middle. I'm headlining, and she's opening. And I said, well, maybe this was prophetic because she ended up becoming a talk show host anyway.
Right. She was never really a stand-up for the long haul.
Like, you know what? She ended up doing what she was cut out
for.
She got the show. And
yeah, it's interesting you see that happen in stand-up, you know, who just ends up like, you know, because like, do you love doing comedy still or what?
You know, I love performing and I still like writing and I still like doing it, but I don't like to travel anymore.
Sure.
I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
You know, if you see the cover of my book, it's me with my rolly bag and a backpack looking up at the sign where the plane's going.
Right.
That's the picture of my book.
Right, right.
Because it's a life in comedy. It's about being on the road. It's about living out of a suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
It's the loneliness of the job.
And like you were saying before, that's the one thing I always remember. It's like every time you go do a road gig, it's like, did they have to find a hotel that was not near anything? Is this like you're always in the industrial park or out far away from anything, and then you're like, well, maybe I'll just go get coffee, and you're the one guy walking, mile.
I know. That's the bumfuck Michigan gig I was talking
right,
about.
Right, and you're excited if the place is connected to a mall. Like, if the mall's right there, you're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I go to the movies.
At least I catch a movie. I can get some food.
Yeah.
I can shop.
Yeah.
You know, like a depressed woman, shop and buy shit to make yourself feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
It's a lonely existence, man. And it can really eat at you after a while.
Well, when you were here initially, like after, what was your... sort of, how did a career unfold when you were here? Because you worked a lot, and then you got the series, and you must have thought at that time, we're like, oh, this is it.
Well,
when did
what?
That happen? How'd that all happen?
Well, in 93, Rick Messina, who was a comedy manager, he handled Tim Allen. Tim Allen had become a star already on Home Improvement,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing a theater and around in Orange County. And he said, John, you want to open up for Tim this week?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing this gig out in Orange County. I said, yeah, I'll open for him. So I go out there and I do 20 minutes. I had this really killer set. And unbeknownst to me, some people from Disney television were in the audience.
Yeah.
The same people that, you know, worked for Tim Allen, Dean Valentine. He ran Disney TV.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
And he comes up to me afterwards and says, man, I really loved your stuff. He goes, I think you could be the next Tim Allen. He says, I want to get Warren Littlefield out to see you. And
the head of NBC?
At the Comedy Store. He was the head of NBC at the time.
Yeah.
And I said, this is awesome. So we scheduled for the next week. I call in all the friends I knew, every marker I could cause.
Yeah.
Just come out this one night, you know, laugh like De Niro in Cape Fear in the movie scene where he's just laughing his ass off.
Was it main room?
It was in the original room.
Yeah.
But I packed it.
Yeah.
And I go up and I did my 10 or 15 minutes, 20 minutes or whatever. I have a killer set. The next day, they offer me a pilot.
Right.
So we shoot the pilot. It's called The Good Life. it's a they make it an a mid-season replacement show.
Who's in it with you?
It was Eve Gordon was my wife. Justin Barfield was one of my sons. He was 6 years old. He ended up working more than any of us after the show. Yeah. He never stopped working.
Yeah.
He went from that to, you know, Malcolm in the Middle. He was like the third son. The kid never stopped working. He was 6 years old in my show. He worked more than anybody.
Yeah.
But it was a fun show. Jeff Martin was the producer. He just came off, The Simpsons. He was a head writer on The Simpsons. Disney hired him to be a showrunner, you know, to produce comedy, sitcoms for them. And it ended up, you know, being short-lived. But I got to see how the other half lived.
But you did a whole season, right?
I did. It was a mid-season replacement show.
Yeah.
But the problem was it was NBC.
How many episodes?
And we did 13 episodes. Yeah. They all aired. But after the first four airings, they took us off for the Winter Olympics.
Ugh.
So all the... all the momentum we got, we lost.
How did was it responded to well? Did people react?
Well, the problem was we followed Saved by the Bell, the college years, and which was the worst rated show on TV at the time.
Ugh.
So we had no lead in.
Yeah.
And the three shows that came out that night was Saved by the Bell, John Larroquette, and John Mendoza, and myself.
Yeah.
And there was no show to help kick off the other show.
Yeah.
The only show that year was Seinfeld, and the show that followed it was Frasier. He was the only show that could help kick off someone. Everybody else was thrown to the wolves.
Yeah.
It died a slow death, and that was my big shot. And
yeah.
I was the star of that show, and it showed me how the other half lived.
Yeah.
It got me my house in Studio City.
Yeah.
And I was able to hold on to it, you know, for 21 years.
Yeah.
But I told my wife when we bought it, I said, "Hun, this is a beautiful home." I said, but if this show doesn't go, and I'll find out in a month, you know,
we might have fucked
up. I said, you'll never see me again because I'll be on the road for, you know, trying to pay for it. And sure enough, the show goes under, and I've been on the road for the last 21 years trying to pay for it.
What did she say at that moment, though? No, John, it's going to go.
No, she goes, this place is beautiful.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I guess we're above our means here.
Yeah,
but we ended up keeping it. It was the only thing in my life. I ended up getting on the right side of the curve.
Right, right.
It quadrupled on me.
Sure.
Because I was able to hold on to it.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's my retirement.
Yeah.
You know? All my money's into it.
And yeah, yeah.
I want to cash in my chips so I can retire because that's my 401k.
Are you thinking about selling the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm tired of the road and I want to downsize.
What do you want to do, get a condo or something?
Yeah, either a 3 or 2 bedroom condo or
stay
something.
Stay here, though?
I'm trying to stay here because my kids are here and I don't want to bail on them and it'd be nice to just move to Phoenix or Albuquerque and buy a 4-bedroom.
Yeah, I grew up in Albuquerque. You think in Albuquerque?
Well, I have two sisters that live there.
No shit.
You know,
where's Cindy?
Cindy's in LA. She's in Sherman Oaks, but I got two sisters live in Albuquerque.
No kidding.
I could buy a house for a song there and retire altogether.
Right.
And
it's a nice city.
Yeah, you know, it's a great city, and I like it there.
Phoenix not as good. Albuquerque's nice.
Yeah, I like it because it's a little cooler.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I like the whole snow.
And it doesn't all look
winter.
The same. You know, Phoenix kind of looks the same block to block. You're is that the mall we were just at? Is that the, you know what I mean?
Every
fucking mall is the same color. The same. My brother lives there.
I know. It's that same.
It's bizarre. It's flat
look.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
But you know, it's an option.
Well, but you did a lot of, you were doing a lot of acting here and there, right?
After I did The Good Life, I got acting parts out the ass. You know, I was doing episodics. I did Love and War. I did L.A. Law. I did ER. I kept getting a lot of acting roles. So I ended up getting a SAG pension from it.
Oh,
you
good.
Know?
Yeah.
And it's not a lot, but it's enough.
Yeah, it's
you
there.
Know, at least to pay my rent wherever I go.
Right.
And, you know, so I ended up getting a lot of acting work out of that.
And you
but bread, you know, stand-up has always been the bread and butter, you know, when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
If I ever have a slow month, I just hit the road and I start working again.
How's your draw out there? You still pull?
Well, you know, I pull in cities where, you know, like St. Louis, Chicago, in the Midwest still.
And what's the turnover on material? You work new shit?
I'm always working new material.
That's
because
great.
It's the only thing that rejuvenates my act.
Exactly.
I can't wait to get to that
exactly.
new bit.
Exactly.
It puts a shot in your arm. Of your act.
Yeah.
You know, because you got that new bit you can't wait to get to.
I know. And if you don't have it, it's like, oh, here we go.
You know,
then, like, right when, isn't that wild, right? So, you know, you're doing the hour and you're tired of the hour. And then all of a sudden you find one thing that fits in with the other two things or whatever. And you get to that. And all of a sudden everything's good again.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You'd be surprised what one good joke or one good bit would rejuvenate your whole act.
Yeah.
Because you can't wait to get to it. And you're excited about everything else again. And it's as a stand-up, because all these new kids start doing it every year, you know, the field just keeps getting more and more tight. And if you don't stay with the times and keep writing, you're going to get lost in the shuffle.
So many guys got lost, right?
Yeah, you know, so many good guys, too, quit because they don't want to do the road anymore.
Yeah.
And you ask any good comic, you know, why'd you stop? Because I couldn't sleep in another hotel. I couldn't do the road anymore. I had to stop.
Mm.
And, you know, and that's where I'm at. I'm at my career. I'm at that juncture right now.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like you got a couple of plans that might work out.
Yeah, I really do want to sell my place and really downsize and chill with the road.
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked to many people about that. When you mention corporate gigs or you mention ships, like, I don't think I've talked to anybody really about, you know, that world of comedy. So, like, what do corporates usually look like? How do they work?
Well, you do a corporate gig, like I'm doing one in a month. It's for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, every year they have a gig where they bring all the ball players together with the local businessmen.
Yeah.
It's called the Knights of the Cauliflower Ear. It started back in the 20s.
Yeah.
When the businessmen would have the ball players come and meet them so that the ball players could get jobs in the off season because they weren't making that much money at the time.
Oh, right.
But even though the ball players can buy and sell these guys now because they make so much money, they kept the tradition up.
Yeah.
So Tony La Russa would bring me in every other year to perform for these guys, and they kept it up, and they want me to come back and do it. So that's just one particular.
Tony La Russa, is he the guy that does the pet charity too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I first met him. I was doing his charity gig.
Yeah, yeah.
So then he became manager of the Cardinals and said, would you come in and perform? Do a couple gigs for me for the team.
It's a good gig?
It's a great gig. You know, you meet all the ball players and businessmen, and it's a fun gig. But this is a corporate gig where you just shoot in for the night, do the gig for them, and you're home the next day.
Right.
Now, if I could do three of those a month and not have to travel, it would be a perfect world.
And your material, you can do a clean hour?
I could do a clean hour, and I could do a dirty hour. You know?
And then, like some of those gigs, from what I understand, because I'm never really sought after for those type of corporate gigs, like, sometimes you have to adapt to, you know, whatever the company is.
Well, I don't do that.
No, good.
I tell the guy, he goes, hey, maybe you could fuck with Joe.
Yeah.
You know, fuck with Joe, you know? Well, Joe's the owner. They don't tell me till afterwards.
Yeah.
And the guy's signing my check. You know? Well, they never told me you own the place. They just said you worked in accounting.
And now Joe's going to fuck you.
Yeah. You thought that joke was funny, huh? I'm going to take another zero off.
Good luck cashing this.
and then you do Carnival or some of these cruise lines. Carnival wants you to do a half hour clean, and then they want you to do a half hour blue as shit, you know?
Is that how it works now?
Yeah. They want you to do one for the family and one for the R rated.
Is there anything good about doing the ships?
The only good thing is that you sometimes have another comic on there that you could pal around with.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that other comic, or the other comic's a douchebag, and you don't want to hang with them, it becomes a really long week.
Yeah.
And there's so much downtime.
And you keep running into the audience.
Yeah, and you're alone with your thoughts a lot because you don't know anybody.
And you're on the
water.
Then
you try to make small talk with people just so you don't feel like a lonely guy.
Yeah, there's a sad guy.
And then you're on the water, and you feel so disconnected because you're out at sea.
Yeah.
And you don't see land.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're one of these Navy guys that are trying to get leave and just trying to get on land so you can go and get a hooker and just have some other life outside of I'm talking about the Navy guys, not myself.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying that's how you feel though. You feel like you're in the
isolated,
Navy.
Yeah.
And just want to get leave.
Now, when you're on a ship, do you have to do a show every night?
On Carnival, you do. On Royal Caribbean, you don't. You know, but on Carnival, you have another comic to work with that you can pal around with. On Royal Caribbean, you don't.
Yeah.
You know.
And how often do you do those?
I do maybe one a month or maybe one every 2 months. I've really cut them back because they play with the loneliness gets to me after a while in those ships.
Yeah,
yeah. You know?
Do you get to see parts of the world, or is that even diminished?
Oh, no, you do, but that's diminished for me because how many times can you go to Cozumel? Even though it's beautiful and they have great scuba diving and all that, but when you've been there 100 times,
right,
you can
it's
only
over.
Buy so many sombreros and you can only buy, you know, so much Kahlua.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so, you know, you can only do so much. You get so many boner pills. You know, you can only buy so much of that shit in Mexico.
Yeah. Right, right.
And after a while, it's like, all right, been there, done that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's a...
You never went up to Alaska or anything?
Yeah, I did the old Alaska thing. You know, you can only catch so many salmon. You can only, you know... you know, wave at so many bears and
there's the sad guy waving at the bears again. The bears are feeling bad for you. Is that guy back? He's just woke up.
Oh, my God.
I got to look at that guy, the sad comic.
Oh, my God. Why doesn't he get a podcast and just stay home and try to get a following or something? You know, write on a sitcom. But this guy's here every other month.
Oh, shit.
Does he get tired of this? Hey, I got 3 kids, man. I got to feed the family.
Yeah. We understand. We got cubs.
You know, it's funny. Everybody sees the world of a stand-up. Oh, my God. This guy works an hour a night. He's banging all the waitresses. He's getting coked up out of his mind. He's living large.
No, man.
It's like you get all this love and acceptance from the audience.
Yeah.
You know, they're buying your CDs. They're buying you drinks after the show. Yeah. They're buying your paraphernalia. Yeah. And you're getting all this love. And an hour later, you're in your hotel room watching HBO, eating a Domino's pizza, jerking off.
That's it.
And that's your life. And you are the loneliest guy in the world.
That's right.
Yeah. You win, right? Yeah. You win. Yeah. You want to put a bullet in your head.
I used to have a lot of my fans would bring me baked goods for a while because I used to talk about it. So I'd end up in the hotel room with three or four trays of baked cookies and cakes just sitting there on my bed, jerking off surrounded by fucking cake. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Is this the victory? Am I living it? You know? Oh my God. Some life.
Yeah.
It's a trip, too, when you, that, because I'm at that point right now where I've got to write sort of a new hour. I got to get a nice big piece going. And, you figure out where do you start that? You know, what story is going to be this? So, usually the way it goes with me is, you get that one piece where, I can build around that. That's the main piece. Yeah. And let's see what comes in between and after and whatever.
Right.
But you forget there's still this weird courage necessary to fucking take the hit when you're building this thing.
Oh, it's unbelievable courage.
You
don't know where all the laughs are yet.
Nope.
You don't want to write it. You don't want to try and memorize everything.
Yeah.
Because no one can write 45 minutes and memorize it.
Right.
You want to go up there with the gist of it.
Yeah.
So to give you the freedom.
Right.
To roam and discover stuff while you're on stage.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to get up there with a recorder and just say, I'm going to fly. And then when something hits, you go, oh, fuck, God, what did I do there?
Yeah.
I got to remember. How did I do that?
Yeah.
And if you don't have that recorder there to play it back.
You're fucked.
You know, you're fucked.
A lot of times I record and I don't even listen to the recording. I'll just keep doing it the way I think I should probably listen more.
Yeah.
Record everything?
No. No, but there's something about knowing where that laugh hits that makes you remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's just the nature of the job.
It's a built-in thing where you go, all right, that was funny.
You ever hit those ones where you get the laugh and you can never get it again? Where you're like, what the fuck did I do that one night?
I know, that pisses you off so much because you didn't record it and you're like, how did I phrase that?
Yeah.
Maybe it was the timing. Yeah. Maybe it was the delivery. It was the wording. Why didn't I record it? I fucked myself.
Lost. One audience saw that genius bit.
Yeah, and you're improvising and shit's kicking ass, and then you can't recreate it because you didn't record it.
I got to remind myself. I got to make sure I do that. So what's your sister doing? Is she writing on television now?
She's right now she's in between jobs. I think it's the first time in her career where she hasn't been on a show.
Mm-hmm.
She's really been lucky falling into...
She got a family?
No, she's got a husband.
Yeah,
but she has no kids.
Oh, okay.
But
so they got no cousins.
She got a place
here in
Sherman Oaks. She's been at it. You know, she went from Second City. To
I remember
working
her
on SNL.
Right.
To working on Norm Macdonald. To My Boys. To Nurse Jackie. To she did a thing. Shameless. She's been on a million things.
You guys close?
Yeah, she's 4 years younger than me, so all grew up together.
That's fucking sweet. I think it's sweet that you still got this relationship with your family. You know, I talk to a lot of people, and they're like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't talk to my brother. I don't see that guy. I don't know.
You know what? I keep in touch with all of them, and even though we're all parts of the country, I got a brother in San Francisco, two in Albuquerque, one in Chicago, and, we all keep in touch.
That's great. And you go back every year to Chicago a couple times?
I get back there 4 and 5 times a year to do the clubs or a wedding or funeral.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I have so much family back there. I didn't even leave till I was 30. So I still have all the people I played ball with, people I went to college with, people I went to high school with.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many people back there.
And you don't see yourself living there again? You don't want to?
You know, I could.
Yeah, right.
I could live back there, easily, but I am used to the weather out here.
Yeah.
And, I've been out here 30 years now, so.
Your kids grew up here and your wife, where's she from? She from here?
She's originally from New York, but then she grew up in Florida and came out here in in the mid, she came out here in the 80s, uh-huh. and I met her when she was a waitress at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
well, you know, it's great to talk to you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I
it's great to see you.
I'm happy for you, because I know you get on the ground floor when these podcasts first start.
Rare when
you're,
that happens.
You're like the pioneer of this.
Once in my life.
I'm so happy for you that it actually took off for you.
Once in my life, the cosmic timing worked.
Yeah.
It's like, I had no expectation. Like, it's like you said about your house. Like, if you could get one of those in your life where you're like, that was ahead of the curve on this. You know what I mean? Like,
and it was all by blind luck.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. It's like, you know, if you get one of those, you can't plan that shit, but if you get one of those in your life, good for you. Whatever the fuck it is.
I know. It happened to be my house for me and your podcast for you. But more power to you, man. I'm happy for you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for talking, John.
All right.
That was me, John Caponara. His book, Life and Comedy, you can get it on Amazon. And I'm sure you can see John if you look him up on the internet. So, as always, go to WTFpod.com, powered by Squarespace, and check out the tour dates, the merch, the stuff, the things. Get on the email list. You know, that kind of thing. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. All right. Hold on. I'm going to get my Les Paul and plug it into that dirty old man amp.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.